Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Hope Leans Forward, Braving Your Way Toward Simplicity, Awakening, and Peace, by Valerie Brown. Narrated by Michelle Williams. Introduction. Complications are auspicious. Do not resist them. The Song of the Jewel Mirror Samadhi. Many people reach out to me in the passages of their lives. Sometimes it's because they've lost a thread of meaning or misplaced the small messages of hope that once led them to the center of their lives. They are treading deep waters of discontent without navigational aids. They dwell in uncertainty, yet hope for clear seeing. They admire courage, yet live in fear. They are seduced by control, but secretly want to surrender. They crave a generous heart, yet constricted with deadly self-criticism, cynicism, and self-doubt. I am constantly astonished and humbled by the people who find their way to me, seeking guidance because of the many roles I hold and the varying work I do in the world. As a Buddhist Dharma teacher, Dharmacharya, Quaker facilitator, spiritual director, retreat and pilgrimage leader, writer, and leadership coach, all after a 20-year career as a lawyer lobbyist, I am often contacted by potential spiritual directees, mentees, coaches, and pilgrims, as well as religious organizations, universities, and nonprofits. Sometimes a person who listened to one of my many Dharma talks or was moved by something I wrote reaches out to me because something vital and vibrant isn't working in their life. In the people who find their way to me, the glow of their guiding inner compass, their true self, their soul, has dimmed to a faint light. Seized by a persistent, cannot-ignore-it longing, these seekers of diverse identities, ages, races, sexual orientations, genders, socioeconomic backgrounds, and faith traditions seek me out, often with great urgency. Much like the wayfarers of ancient times, these individuals and organizations can no longer rely on the tools of the past that have brought them to an unfulfilled, unresolved, or ambiguous point where there are questions without easy answers. The navigational devices, the map, guide, compass, or sextant, can't get them where they want to go. They are being called to a living observation of the stars, the sun, the ocean swells, and other signs that point the way to a new location and direction. They are moving toward the soul, the true self, and their deepest longing. Maybe, like them, you also are holding these feelings, and that is what drew you to this book. Wherever you are on your spiritual awakening, your life's journey, I trust you'll find resources here to guide you toward what is most meaningful. In this book, I offer observations about guiding principles and patterns that I've seen emerge over time, first in my own life, and then with others. Out of necessity, I have been wayfinding through my own life, noticing the smallest signals that were calling me into a journey toward a more robust and authentic version of myself. Even now, in a mature time of my life, I am drawn to create a vision of myself larger and more expansive than I could imagine or understand, even as hope seemed ungraspable and distant for such a long time. Like many people, maybe like you, I've had it rough during the last few years with the global pandemic and the full-on reality of climate change. I've half-jokingly said that over the last several years, since 2016, I've been in my own global pandemic and the rest of the world has joined me. Perhaps you know the feeling of being pulled, at times uncontrollably, by a myriad of converging, almost inconceivable life circumstances into full-blown crisis. Mine began when my father died in 2016. Our relationship was complicated. He did what he could, and that was pretty bad. But despite his walking out on us as kids, despite his raging out of control, his workaholism, after years of keeping him at a safe distance, after years of hoping he'd be different or the relationship would be different, I accepted him, and he accepted me. I accepted who he was and what he did, and that I deserved better, but didn't get that from an imperfect, very human person. We reconciled. I made my peace, selfishly, because I knew if I didn't transform the rage I had learned from him, I would pass it on to others, and it would consume me. I flew back from the United Kingdom, where I was leading retreats, to be by his bedside when he took his last breath. He looked at me and took my hand. I was there for him, and he knew it. The rage had become something else, something softer, something that felt more like forgiveness. The complications continued when my mostly distant and painfully ambiguous marriage of 15 years fell apart in 2018, and my then partner moved out in 2019. I remarried late in life and was totally unprepared to truly love, having inherited so much of my dad's seething rage. In the marriage, there was a kind of false hope and wishful thinking, delusion, really, that maybe, despite all the warning signs, things would work out. It did for a while, until it didn't. About the same time, my beloved brother Trevor was slowly dying of chronic heart failure. Day by day, his heart was getting fainter, weaker, until he needed round-the-clock skilled care and went into a crappy nursing home on the Upper West Side of Manhattan, the same place his wife of more than 30 years was living due to her advanced Parkinson's disease. Little did I know that heart disease was prevalent in my family. In 2017, my brother Louis received a heart transplant after more than a month in ICU. Despite it all, I kept hoping that somehow Trevor would beat the odds, that he'd regain health. But he didn't. He died in February 2020, and then his wife, Gwen, died 6 months later, and I hit a thick fog of grief. I ate but couldn't taste anything. Spring and then summer arrived, but I hardly noticed the flowering trees. Where was hope now? Then in March 2020, the global pandemic of COVID-19 brought quarantine, lockdown, and death to millions of people worldwide. Context matters. I am writing specifically from my perspective as a Black woman of Cuban-Jamaican descent living on the East Coast of the United States through a global pandemic. Like many other people who carry a social group identity that is marginalized because of race and gender, I can relate to the disproportionate impact the global pandemic has had on Black and brown people and other marginalized groups. I recognize, too, that the world is changing fast. The realities of the global climate crisis are real, and its effects on developing nations are disproportionately felt. My life, and perhaps yours too, has been touched by the consequences of global warming. Strangely, when did we become accustomed to floods, excessive heat waves, uncontrolled fires, and drought? Perhaps for the first time, we are gravely aware that we share this planet, that we are interconnected despite our differing locations in the world and differing beliefs and values. What happens in Wuhan, China, affects people in San Francisco, United States. As happened to many people, the initial months of COVID-19 brought an abrupt end to a large part of my income. Family and friends got sick or died. As the global pandemic continues, businesses and individuals have struggled with shutdowns, physical distancing, supply chain disruptions, and unexpected shifts in work arrangements, as well as the pandemic's toll on physical and mental health. I felt nearly all of this, and maybe you have too. What happens in Minneapolis affects us all. In May 2020, in the United States, the murder of George Floyd, an unarmed African-American man at the hands of police, ignited intense demonstrations, which spread rapidly in shockwaves around the world. This and other unlawful police conduct that killed countless unarmed Black people resulted in calls for defunding police departments and demanding for change after centuries of racism. Some peaceful protests turned confrontational and extended beyond demands for police reform to calls for removal of monuments and landmarks that are symbols of imperialist power, violence, and racial terror. During this time, many people in the United States and perhaps the world realized that the exhaustion, anxiety, and ambiguity within themselves might be related to the persistent inequity and anxiety they see around them in society. You, like them, might be asking how, through inaction, silence, distraction, or dodging what feels complicated and uncomfortable, you have contributed consciously or unconsciously to the perpetuation of systemic racial injustice and to the global climate crisis. These questions ask for a different, more soulful, wholehearted, all-in engagement. Again, I kept asking myself, where is hope now? After months of wrestling with this question without answers, I resolved that maybe there weren't answers. Honestly, I felt hopeless, but the question kept lingering in me. The following year, in 2021, I tiptoed into the online dating world knowing I wasn't ready, but I would let hope lead me anyway. Is there a way to enter into a relationship without the risk of having your heart broken? I don't think so. I was vulnerable, maybe too vulnerable, too fragile, and I got dumped twice by the same guy. Where is hope now? It has taken much longer than I would have wanted to make sense of what was happening to and around me. I don't have answers, and the question of hope persists. In September 2021, perhaps fed by climate crisis, a record-setting storm, Hurricane Ida, destroyed a part of my house. I was dazed and running on pure adrenaline as I worked with disaster volunteers to shovel and haul bags of mud out of the basement, mud that was left behind when a 6-foot wall of water wiped out the furnace, electrical panel, and water heater, and then ripped through the kitchen, trashing much of the first floor. After months of working with contractors to restore my house, in December 2021, I received a call in the middle of the night that my brother, Milton, who had been hospitalized for weeks, had gone into septic shock. "I had better come now," the caller said. I got on a plane the next day and arrived at the hospital just before he was taken into emergency surgery to amputate his leg, which was the result of medical complications, including renal disease. As a Buddhist, I have learned and lived a basic premise. Life contains suffering. I've trained and even taken a vow to face the truth of suffering, to see and accept reality as it is, while holding the aspiration to work for a more compassionate, peaceful, and just world. Inherently, hope carries with it the possibility that we may not get what we hoped for, the job, the partner, the house, whatever, which carries with it the potential for suffering, fear, anxiety, and disappointment. Hope is not about swinging between optimism and pessimism. Again, the desire for things to be other than what they are is said to be the root of suffering. This isn't a somber recognition, but a capacity to hold the truth of our lives, whether that reality is painful or pleasurable. I've been atomized, deconstructed by the painful losses, the complications I've described, and I am called to awaken to a basic truth. Whether hope is there or not, I must live from my deeply held values of simplicity, awakening, and peace, and let that be my guide. This approach powerfully aligns with the work of Joanna Macy, a scholar of Buddhism, general systems theory, and deep ecology. In her book, Active Hope, Macy speaks of passive and active hope. Passive hope is about waiting for external agencies to bring about what we desire. Active hope is about becoming active participants in bringing about what we hope for. Active hope is powered by our intention, and Macy describes a clear process of cultivating active hope. First, we take a clear view of reality, again, echoing the Buddhist teachings on seeing reality as it is. Second, we identify a direction or our value that we want to see expressed. And third, we take action to move in that direction. For Macy, active hope doesn't require optimism, so we can cultivate it even when we feel hopeless. Rather than weighing our chances and moving forward only if we feel hopeful, we allow our intention, our aspiration, and our purpose to guide our actions and focus instead on choosing to act in alignment with these values. Building on Macy's principles of active hope, Buddhist teacher Roshi Joan Halifax speaks of wise hope, born of radical uncertainty, rooted in the unknown and the unknowable. Wise hope requires that we open ourselves to what we do not know, what we cannot know, that we open ourselves to being surprised, perpetually surprised. In fact, wise hope appears through the spaciousness of radical uncertainty, of surprise, and this is the space in which we can engage. It's in not knowing that hope comes alive. It's in our capacity to see things as they are and to believe that our actions matter, even if we don't know, can't know, the outcome. We are guided by what we care about, what matters most to us, and what we can do to support healing within ourselves and in our beautiful and broken world. Trust and courage are active components of wise hope, echoed in the now famous words of the former Czech statesman Václav Havel, who said, "Hope is definitely not the same thing as optimism." It is not the conviction that something will turn out well, but the certainty that something makes sense, regardless of how it turns out. When I consider the question I have asked myself these last several years, where is hope now? I return to the Buddhist principle of interconnectedness. What happens to me affects you. What happens to you affects me. With this, I realize I am not alone. We all have some measure of suffering and satisfaction. It's inescapable. This book is a response to the question, where is hope now? I don't know, can't know how things will turn out, but I do know that the process of asking myself this question, of staying true to the mystery of this interconnectedness, of recognizing that love is deeply connected to loss, and of living in service of creating a more compassionate life, even when compassion seems very far away, is an important intention, value, and direction. Immense and rapid change is underway and hardwired in daily life. There are no quick-fix solutions to loss of soul, loss of meaning and purpose, loss of hope, racial and social injustice, and climate crisis. Resistance, inertia, confusion, and fear of change are giving way to calls for reflection, courage, and action with purpose and intention. As individuals and as a global community, we are moving into something much larger and deeper. In some ways, this time of global disruption and personal crisis is like following a trackless path or sliding down a hill, losing my footing over and over again as I try to make sense of these profound shifts that have shaped my becoming. We are being called to braver things, to lean forward into hope and action. Despite it all, choosing hope feels right, makes sense. It's true, I didn't ask for this mess of losses, complications, and challenges. But at some point, recognizing that loss, that woundedness is a part of life as risk is a part of love, leads me to choose hope as a way of connecting with everyone else who knows about loss and love. And it leads me toward a more soul-filled and hope-filled life. Hope is the resolve to live with a generous heart, to dedicate and rededicate myself to awaken my soul's voice at this sacred time of global disruption. This call to bravery, to hope, isn't a book I want to write. It's a book I am called to write. All my life, and especially these most recent years, I've navigated scary places, cycles of disruption and grief. Yet I hold the inner knowing that life is beautiful and that brokenness is essential to wholeness. This is something worth sharing. This is a book about small and sometimes less small practices that can lead to a bold and brave life. It reads partly as a memoir, partly as a guidebook with lots of practices that you can use every day, and partly as a storybook illuminated by people filled with hope. The internal disruption of emotional and spiritual alienation and uncertainty is not uncommon. For many years, I read much and understood nothing, writes Teresa of Avila, and the Buddhist teacher Pema Chodron writes, we will be softened by the sheer force of whatever energy arises, the energy of anger, the energy of disappointment, the energy of fear. Early Quaker George Fox brings another perspective. He spoke of two thirsts, to find comfort and security in created things, and to find that same comfort in the Creator. Even throughout this time of tumultuous crisis, I was drawn forward toward making conscious and intentional my soul's voice, even while feeling uncertain. A lot wasn't clear, but what was clear was that I was moving toward the one true thing, my soul. Often, individuals and groups, mentees and coachees, retreatants and pilgrims, religious, reach out to me with quite legitimate questions about the state of their soul, their inner being. They often want straightforward, ready-made answers that will awaken their own intuitive guidance or help them distinguish the inner critic from the voice of the inner soul friend. They want help addressing the tension of years, perhaps decades, of unspoken conflict within their institutions, hoping to resolve issues without the people involved taking legitimate risk. I don't have answers. I'm not checking in as an expert. What I am is grateful for the abundant guidance I receive from all directions, from the natural environment, from the mistakes that led me to the center of my being, and from all kinds of people, some of whom you'll meet in this book. Often I stand at the edge of clear sight, facing a hard truth. I'm asked to create a vision of myself that is larger and more expansive than I could imagine. My insecurities and uncertainties don't disappear. Instead, they demand attentiveness to my life patterns and choices, to listening that becomes a way of praying, not for goods or services, but for openness and bravery, to returning, always returning to what matters most. I have a daily practice of asking myself, am I rationalizing, ignoring, sidestepping a voice that is struggling to be heard, calling me to be more generous, more loving, braver? On this sense of living with intention, value, and purpose, the writer Rebecca Solnit has said, every minute of every hour of every day, you are making the world just as you are making yourself, and you might as well do it with generosity and kindness and style. The cultural anthropologist Angelus Arian found that in many shamanic societies and among many indigenous elders, if you come to a shaman complaining of being disheartened, dispirited, or depressed, they would ask you one of four questions. When did you stop dancing? When did you stop singing? When did you stop being enchanted by stories? And when did you stop being comforted by the sweet territory of silence? So I ask you, are you dancing, singing, storytelling, silent enough? This book is an invitation to listen to silence, to tell your story, to notice patterns, and to actively, wisely choose hope. Navigating this book. Sail with me. Let this book guide you. Embark on life's essential questions of true aliveness and meaning. Discover greater bravery and courage when you're broken, uncomfortable, hammered, or hurt by life. Cultivate clarity and discernment that leads toward your authentic self. With this book as your companion on your brave journey leaning toward hope, you will find features and content that provide structures and offer practices for growth. Each chapter explores one of Buddhism's seven factors of awakening: mindfulness, investigation, energy, joy, tranquility, concentration, and equanimity. These might sound like lofty ideals. However, they refer to a set of embodied practices readily available to all of us. By using this frame, we explore aspects of awakening essential to growth. Within each chapter is a section titled Real Voices, Real Courage, highlighting one person's story of their commitment to living bravely, intentionally, and generously. Each of these cameos is followed by guided mindfulness practices in the Plum Village tradition of Zen master Thich Nhat Hanh. At the end of each chapter is a list of Quaker-style queries. This is a spiritual practice among members of the Religious Society of Friends in the form of questions for spiritual discernment and reflection, designed to strengthen capacity to align action toward a life of love and spirit. As you enter the queries, it's important to remember they don't have right or wrong, yes or no answers. Instead, engaging them is a spiritual discipline, a practice that can lead to new action and new ways of thinking. These queries serve a critical role in the spiritual life of Friends because Quakers don't have creeds or formal statements of beliefs. Instead of a creed, Quakers ascribe to a continuing relationship with God or the inward light that reveals truth and prompts action. Quakers call this relationship with God ongoing revelation, historically referred to as continuing revelation. Many Friends don't have ministers or clergy, believing that each person holds that of God within and therefore has direct, unmediated contact with this divine presence, so ministers or priests aren't required to intercede. Rich in Buddhist and Quaker spiritual wisdom and practice, Hope Leans Forward is also meant to be a playbook designed to be held lightheartedly. As you listen and engage the practices, don't press yourself to get it right. Instead, let it surprise, inspire, and warm your heart, and then see where that leads you. Listen and know that your heart has the genuine strength and beauty to meet you where you are, to grow and to flourish, especially when times are tough. Decisive moments, heartbreak moments, shape and reshape a life of truth-seeking. Paradoxically, these are turning points that also awaken the soul, the true self, to hold true to the vision of who you are while honoring who you are becoming. Remember, you are the courage you are seeking. Let it rediscover you. Let Hope Leans Forward be your return-to guidebook as your soul awakens, which means whatever you learn in these chapters, you likely need to relearn again and again. This is an invitation to start now. I've found a lot of unexpected, unplanned beauty in getting lost, in making the wrong turn that led me down a path to an unexpected treasure, the gnarly, venerable apple tree loaded with fruit, the person harvesting grapes in the field, or the stranger with a lovely smile that draws us together for a moment of connection. Allow your own instinct, your intuition, to guide you as you listen. You are beginning to learn to trust this perhaps hidden part of yourself. To give you a sense of how the book will unfold, the courage, the practices, and the challenges, the following offers a short introduction to each chapter. Again, whatever you hear, or however you decipher the materials, trust what is truest for you. Chapter 1. Calling the Soul, the True Self, and the Deepest Longing. It's hard to break the cycle of habitual patterns and move toward bravery without awakening. Waking the psyche or soul, the inner voice, to deeper awareness is a lifelong practice. Awakening the soul, the true self, is about pausing and slowing down to listen and ask important questions of life meaning, purpose, and aliveness. It's about recognizing and honoring the life you have while holding the vision of the life you want. The soul is seeking to make visible our intention and purpose. Awakening the soul, the true self, also involves engaging the dismal, the unfulfilled, the too much life cycles, which takes courage. In this chapter, the first of seven factors of awakening is mindfulness. The Real Voices, Real Courage cameo comes from my conversation with Eli Tiscareño, urban farmer. The mindfulness practice is awareness of the breath, based on the Buddhist Sutra on the full awareness of breathing, followed by a short form of mindful breathing to strengthen awareness and calm the body and mind. Chapter 2. Daring to Listen to the Inner Voice, the Small Holy. Once the soul has awakened, through loss, grief, a birth or death, nature, a new insight, a relationship, a job loss or gain, and more, It extends the invitation to listen in a new and different way. As we listen, we learn to distinguish the small holy, the soul voice, from the voice of the...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?